This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. In this episode, we will focus on the rural community living near Capel Island and Ballycotton. The headland itself has a striking Napoleonic-era watchtower, which forms part of the superb new walking trail thanks to the efforts of the Knockadoon Enhancement Project. Right next to the tower is Lookout Post 21. This has been lovingly preserved as part of the KEP project. These lookout posts were erected in the uncertain early days of World War II when the Irish government sought to take action to protect the country's neutrality in 1939. These lookout posts were manned by soldiers, many of them men from the local area, and the institution they formed was called the Coastal Watching Service. Coast watchers worked around the clock, 24 hours a day, reporting every military activity they observed in the sea and in the air. Tomás Harrington was born in Knockadoon and has a passion for finding out the stories behind these lookout posts. I asked Tomás what prompted the construction of Lookout Post 21.
It was a government decision back in 1939. In September 1938, the Irish government decided they'd established a coast watching service. They decided then that they'd build these posts, LOPs we call them, lookout posts, around the coast of Ireland, and they were mostly built where there was also had the signal towers, which were built for another dictator back in the late 1700s, which was Napoleon. So that's why they put them in those areas. And if you go around to a lot of the places today, you know, it has lookout posts, more than likely they have a signal tower as well.
I asked Tomás what type of a person volunteered to man Lookout Post 21.
They sought mostly locals. The volunteers had to be between 17 and 50 years of age. And they were mostly fishermen and local farmers. Up to September 1939, it was the Gardaí and the coast watching personnel. It wasn't a kind of a military thing that were basically doing a kind of a 24-hour watch. It's only from September 39 onwards that the coast watching service became troops. Their wages were reasonably good. It wasn't that they were overworked as such. They just had to watch out. The one in Knockadoon, and it was mostly the same for all of them, they worked in twos. So you had the two normal privates, and you had a corporal. You had two corporals normally, but the one in Knockadoon was Davy Connolly. He used to live halfway between Ballymacodan and Knockadoon. And you had a guy called John Slocum. He actually lived on the same road. They had to keep it logged in on what they saw. These huts were built in early 1940, right? And they basically were built in the space of a couple of weeks all over the coast. They were fairly standard built now, right? They were built with these kind of precast blocks. And if you go to the one in Knockadoon, it's very easy to see these precast blocks, like. And they were all built the exact same size. The likes of the people that were in Knockadoon was Teddy Shea. You have Michael Cotter. Michael Cotter now was the pub in Ballymacodan where Finn's is. John Cronin, which is a very close neighbour down the road. He'd be Billy Cronin's father. Johnny Cronin's brother, Patty Cronin they called him, or Petty Cronin. There was a Defus Gerald, he wasn't a local now, he was a guy I think that could have come from Ballycotton. Teddy O'Shea, Teddy was a legend, like he was a fierce nice man, a fisherman. There was a guy called C. Stewart, I don't know his first name, but he wasn't a local either, he was a guy that came in again. Richie Shanahan, he lived down in the houses down Barryscove. And Pat Smitty's father, Massey Smitty, he was one of them as well. So that was your crew for Knockadoon, and you had the two corporals in, John Slocum and Davy Connolly.
Although those who manned the lookout post never engaged in active service in World War II, the reality of war was never far away, with the bodies of those who'd lost their lives washing ashore on a regular basis.
The amount of bodies that were washed ashore between Ring in Waterford now and we'd say Ballycotton, between July and December, you're nearly up to 200 bodies washed ashore in that distance.
What did they do when they found these bodies?
I suppose they were taken away by the army probably and brought to Cork, and hopefully they had their dog tags on them at the time, you know. But it was a depressing time.
Ireland remained neutral during World War II. However, there was a huge threat to those living by the coastline in the form of mines.
Between 1940 and 1941, there was 100 mines came ashore between Ring again in Waterford and Ballycotton. The Allies, they had laid a minefield in the Celtic Sea. With storms, they broke their anchorage and they would have been washed ashore, like I said, along here, right? The first mooning that was recorded in Ramhead logbook was on the 24th of January 1941. And the 27th of January 1941, five moonings were recorded. And they were between just between Whiting Bay, which is just out here from Knockadoon, and a place called Ballyquin. It just goes to show the amount of mines that were washed up. But Paddy High told me that there was a mine came below, as we call it locally here in Knockadoon, to Spur. The army, the regular army, were called to disconnect it or whatever, and it was taken away. As I'm on the mines, my own mother, she originally came from Ballykilty in Killa, but her aunt was living down in Willie Hyde's Head now, Willie Hyde's Corner, as we call it. She used to come down there as a young girl. She often told me stories that they'd be at home and there was an explosion down the rock somewhere. And at that time, as you know, they had all these old dressers with all the china, the special wear that they used to have for the stations. Or, you know, there was the good wear, we'll say. The explosion called the whole atom to fall off the dresser and break on the ground. If there was a mine floating, we'll say, 500 metres out from the coastline, that the regular army would come and fire at it and make it explode.
These volunteers played a very important part in the war effort. However, their working conditions were sometimes difficult.
They were there from, we'd say, roughly January 1940 to June 1945. You know, that's 5 years going back and forth to Knockadoon. All they had was a fire, a standard small fire. They were tough conditions. Now, it was a nice place to be probably in the summer months, but the winter months, they earned it. Like, looking back now, we know exactly what went on afterwards and what happened, right? But at the time, you know, it wasn't the lovely, cushy job that we might think it is now, because they had no idea what was ahead of them. Like, you know, would Hitler invade Ireland? Like, and if he was going to invade Ireland, more than likely it would be Cork. The Cork Harbour he would attack, like, because that was the second biggest harbour in the world. So Cork would have been the place that he would have come in. So you can imagine how they felt. They probably were a bit gung-ho about the whole thing, but deep down, I'd say they were scared enough. Like, I asked Paddy Hyde this question, like, how did you feel about it? Were you worried? And I asked Nellie Sloan the same question, like, and they said they knew nothing about it. They were only reading what they might get the paper and what they're told, and they were probably told very little about it, you know. To me, they were brave enough men, like.
Knockadoon Pier remains a working harbour for local fishermen. Boats fish the water here for lobster, bass and plaice. These hardy fishermen are the remnants of a much larger local industry. Government policies have had a dramatic impact on fishing families in the area, and the future remains uncertain. Local fisherman John Motherway speaks about how things have changed over the years and what the future holds for Irish fishermen. I began by asking him, what was it like fishing off the coast of Knockadoon during its heyday?
We started in the 60s, you know. I was always interested in boats, like, but, you know, interested in fishing, like, you know, fishing after rocks and what have you, like. Then I got a small little boat, myself and my dad, and we started off there, you know, from there, and just pollock and cod and things first, and then I got a licence in 68. It was the first seven licences were very scarce at that stage, and you go in and £3 is all they wanted, and go in and put down a name and you got a licence, like, you know. And there was seven boats there, I'd say. I'll name a couple of them anyway. There was me, you know, there was Timmy Griffin, Jackie Bryan, Paddy Shea, Johnny Welsh, Mickey Welsh, Bernie Bryan. These were families now, like, and these were 6 months fishing. That time there was no dole, there was nothing. They were living solely out of fishing. If there was bad weather came, they might go away to a farm or working for a couple of days, you know, just to boost for pocket money, like the man says. But other than that, we were living solely on the fishing. We'd go into the lobster then after that, like after August. No, we fished the lobster nearly all through the year. But that time, salmon fishing was salmon fishing and the lobster fishing was lobster fishing, which was great for the species because it gave things a chance to replenish. In Knockadoon, you have the Blackwater Lake and you have the Womana. You have two rivers. That's why it's such a good fishing place, like, because you had the fresh water there all the time, like. And I reckon the salmon, like, when we were salmon fishing, the salmon that were born up those rivers, are probably born up Venice, the one which would be the Womana, like, and up the Blackwater, like, all them fish came back. No, they wouldn't be all Blackwater fish, like, but they came back, and that's why they kept around the area, nosy around till they got their own, whatever scent they had, they went up that river into where they were spawned. Isn't that wonderful, like, isn't that just geez, if I went up to McGill, I'd get lost. You know what? They know.
There were many characters working out of Knockadoon, and John remembers some of them.
Poor old Johnny Welsh, a lot of mercy, now he's dead now. Johnny and Teddy Shea used to be down the sound, fishy way, but 6 o'clock would come, Teddy be getting thirsty, like, you know. And these were very good seasons now, like, there could be 20, 30, 40 fish aboard. But Teddy, they'd be inside in the slip, like, and he'd be below at the sound. Teddy said to Johnny, come on away. I know, he said, we'll hold him. He said, leave something there for tomorrow. No, that is not the way to do it. We're greedy now, we'll try and catch the whole lot today, like. But that time, they only just got what they wanted. They'd done a day's work, a hard day's work, mind you. I thought they were wonderful people. But then we had a character order, Johnny Welsh, and he was just a dude, an adorable man. We went out longer, we had the radio. There was no mobile phones or nothing. The crafts were so small that we were all close together, and we all had our own little signs. There was never anyone lost. Whereas today, like, we're all loners now today.
Many of the skills these fishermen had are now long gone. John explains.
There was a bloke over in Knockadoon, and he used to make the nets by hand. That tradition is all gone, like. There's maybe a few now can still do it, like, in the autumn of their lives, like. But that will go. Paddy Shea'd make a pair of oars, you know, and I could put a plank into a boat. Paddy could fix a boat, you know, a clinker mill boat. Now, I think that's a lovely trade, like. No, you ask a captain to do that today and he won't know. Well, he never saw it done, like. He could build a house and he could do this and he could do that, but making creels for the lobsters, like, that was another act, you know. You were doing that in the winter time, and instead of being down the pub, well, you had no money for the pub, but this kept you occupied making this thing, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was wonderful, like. The skill that's gone, it is a skill to, like, the cooper, like, in the you know, it is all those things. The men with the horses, the tackling, the cobbler and the saddler. You know, they were lovely trades, like, and there's none of it today, like.
Changes to government policies have meant that it's no longer viable for the small fishermen with one vessel to make a living. John laments this.
Those people were awful, they were awful united. Well, we could be very nitty-gritty, like, you know, looking for our own space, but if there was anyone in trouble, they were all there to help, you know. They were a lovely community, they're lovely, lovely people. And if you like, it is a thing that's, it is finished, it is ruined, like. But Knockadoon was one beautiful, beautiful spot. I miss the boats there, and we're going to Yall there no long ago, we're going shopping, and you see the boats out here in Red Bear and all along, up as far as Pillmore, and inside in the harbour, you know, they were all different licences. You had uppers and lowers and outers, you know, because we were the outers, we'd be the lower class, you know. Them boats, they all made a living out off the sea, a free, like a natural, it was there for the taking. Like, we're hunters, aren't we? That's what we were, that's what we're here for. This big fella came along, like, and he tried to ruin all that. He wiped out 20 small little punts. All them 20 punts, all them ate their dinners and suppers every day, like, they all had to be clad. Where the big fella with the 50-footer, like, he's only one man, like, one family, you know. I think that's where everything went wrong. I can see the day will come, like, and there'll be nothing in Knockadoon, like, which will be a crying shame, like. Steve now, and we've another lad over there now, Vince O'Brien, to be Bernie's son. Vince is a lovely lad, like a young married man again. When his family will rise up, like, will there be anything there for them, like?
I asked John, had he ever visited the island himself?
We used to love to go out there. When you go out there, you're kind of a world of our own, like, you know, it is tranquil, you know, there's another sound, like, the birds, the bees, you know, the goats, a few goats, well, they'll all visit. They're at the other side of it, you know, they won't be close to you, know, they wouldn't want to be too close because there's a pong off of them, like, you know, but they're always a civil distance away from them, like, you know, you won't steal up in them, you know, which is a lovely, lovely little spot. And another thing I'll say about, to just tell you what's after happening in Ireland, in rural Ireland today. Would you go to Cable, and of course there's heather there and what have you there, but you've the birds, you've seagulls and cormorants and like we call them, the fulmers, the shytocks we call them, and a few hawks and what have you, like. But you have the bees and you have the grasshoppers. Why are they in Knockadoon Island, like, we'll say a mile and a half offshore, and they're not inside in the mainland? Because man hasn't yet touched it. He hasn't yet come. There's no one out there spraying, there's no one out there spreading slurry, there's no one out there doing nothing illegal. 'Tis untouched, and I think that's wonderful. And to be noise that people would take a little lesson from a thing like that. Like, it is a simple thing to look at nature. And if we'll kill the bees, we'll kill everything else with it, because the flower will go, the apple will go. I have two apple trees outside there, and no apples because we've no bees. The bees, like, they're the most necessary thing in the world. Nature will tell you where you're going wrong, like, if you watch it, like.
In the final episode, we'll speak to Shane Supple, Eddie Fitzgerald, and explore some of the folklore associated with Knockadoon and Capel Island. Ilan an Coppola, The Lighthouse That Never was made by Capel Island Productions. This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Written, produced and presented by Orla Reardon, edited by Sean Healy.